At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
What's up, you guys? It is Sunday morning here in the United States. Sunday afternoon for our guest we have on the line. We're talking WWE SummerSlam Night 1. Ryan Droste, Jesse Velasquez, and we brought him back for the second show in a row. Our good friend Carl Longhan from across the pond in the UK. Carl, how you doing this morning?
Yeah, good, good. Happy after a decent morning of watching pro wrestling. So I hopefully have started a good run of shows in August. Possibly one attending in person. Potentially, I've yet to make my mind up on Forbidden Door.
Oh, yeah, that would be good. You could give us a live perspective.
Mm.
Very good. Well, we're happy to have you back this morning, subbing for Justin Joint. This is the first of two shows Top Rope Nation is doing for you today. We're recapping night one the morning after, like we usually do. And then tonight, we're going to actually stay up late and do night two after the show ends. Actually, we really won't have to stay up very late. I mean, the show ended at, well, it was before 9 o'clock Central last night. Jesse, how are you doing this morning?
It's a little before 8:30. I actually started a little bit late myself. I did a little bit of day drinking, hence why I have the beer drinking pro wrestling guys t-shirt on. You can find that at the Top Rope Nation shop. So yes, my viewing was a little bit different than it normally is. I did have a lot of fun. And by the way, we are much better as a three-man conglomerate. So Carl, thank you so much for joining us. We always appreciate it.
100%. Appreciate Carl. Appreciate all the patrons whose names are going across the bottom of the screen right now. That's the number one way you can support Top Rope Nation. Link is in the description here. If you are on YouTube, you can also become a channel member for just $2.99. Get the video versions of most of our bonus shows, including Top Rope Nation Classics, which just dropped the other day. We went back in time to Great American Bash 1986. So you can check that out as a YouTube member or as a patron. But we're not talking 1986 this morning, you guys. We're talking 2025 WWE Night 1. I'm going to ask you all for the grade. If you all are joining us live right now in the chat, you can go ahead and give us your grade, A through F, on Night 1 of the show, and we'll get you involved in the broadcast as well. Super chats are open if you want to make sure to get your comment featured in the show as well. Just another way to support us. Jesse, A through F, what are you giving Night 1 of SummerSlam 2025?
I had a hard time grading this one. So I'm glad I went back and rewatched the main event this morning, which definitely held up the second time. I'm going with a B. There wasn't anything that I disliked, and everything was, I felt pretty fluid all the way through, and the main event in my mind was spectacular. Just good old school feel to it, which I absolutely loved, and on second viewing it was even better to me. So, and of course you had the main event angle that tailored along with it. Everything felt like it flew for me. So that's, again, you mentioned I think it ended at 8:20 last night here Central Time. So yeah. B.
Nice. I love these early shows. I wish AEW would get back to, you know, starting at least 6 Central. But yeah, starting at 5 Central was amazing. I still had the night left. I watched the season finale of The Bear, which I had left to watch. It was outstanding. You know, I had my night ahead of me still and watched a great wrestling show. Carl, where are you at on this one?
Exactly the same as Jesse B. Really solid show. Surpassed my expectations for night one. It did look the week with the two cards. Obviously, tonight is very stiff heavy. Which might mean it runs a little longer than last night, hopefully not too much longer. But I was pleasantly surprised. The length was a thing that shocked me. I watched the first hour live. Got up this morning thinking I'm going to have like 3.5 hours to watch, because I was thinking it'd be 4.5 hour show, which in hindsight, looking at the match, is probably not so much. And when I saw it was 2:20 left, I'm like, oh, fantastic. This is great. And actually, yeah, the matches probably none of them needed to go any longer than they did. Might have knocked maybe 5 minutes off the sled tag match. Possibly, I think the heat on Orton went maybe a couple of minutes too long, potentially. But really, really impressed with what they put on. I thought, you know, not an all-in, but certainly not a SummerSlam 2023 example, which was a terrible show from memory.
That's for sure. Yeah, I'm right there with you guys. I'll go like just a smidge higher. I'll give it a B plus. I think it's in that B range. I didn't quite go to A because, you know, well, last night at BR, I said that there wasn't a match of the year contender for me, even though I really liked the main event. But on the second watch of the main event, it might be a match of the year contender. So this like almost puts it in the A range for me. But I'm just like right there. So I'll say B plus. I think the rest of the card was fairly strong. There wasn't like another match that was crazy good, but I didn't think there was anything that was really bad on the show. Was there something I go back and watch? Absolutely. That main event did it this morning, just like Jesse. So yeah, I'll go B plus. It was a solid, solid show. Definitely the best WWE PLE since night one of Mania this year, which ironically also ended with Seth Rollins being the focus of went off the air. I mean, he's been kind of the standout star this year, I think. And, you know, we're going to talk about all that later in the show. But, you know, hopefully tonight they don't end like night two of WrestleMania did, where it was just a huge downgrade from night one. I hope night two can live up to night one. So, yeah, I'll be at a B plus here. Let's see what our followers on X Twitter gave this show.
Hey,
there we go. Pretty much in line with us. We had about 52 votes there, 52% B, about 15% A, 25% C, 7% D or F. So, I mean, yeah, pretty much in line with what we're saying here. I agree with the followers over on Twitter.com. I wish Blue Sky would add polls, by the way. I still got to go back to Twitter to do the polls. So there it is there. You know, we could do this one of two ways. We could start with the main event and work backwards. I think this morning, though, we're going to work up to the main event and end talking about that. I think that's the way we will do this. So we'll start right at the beginning of the show where, you know, they opened with America the Beautiful. They had Cardi B come out. They've been teasing Cardi B, doing stuff with them for a long, long time. And then it was like several months ago they said she was going to be on the show, and then he didn't hear anything about it for a long time. She comes out to the ring. I don't know. I don't think she really added anything to the show. I know they like getting the stars involved and all of that, but I don't know. Any thoughts on Cardi B coming out to the ring, Jesse?
She was over the top. She was extremely excited to be there. That's what I wrote, quite in all caps. Yeah. So yeah, didn't really add too much flavor to it. I think she has been she's a definite self-professed pro wrestling fan. I've seen it in the past. So it's nice that you can at least bring somebody in there that appreciates what is in front of her. So, and it was weird we didn't see her again the rest of the night.
Yeah. I thought they might like put her out talking to people backstage, maybe even like people in the front row of the crowd or something. Nothing at all. We did get the Minute Maid sponsor though. The carton of orange juice or whatever that was. We had that, but no more Cardi B.
I'm going to spoil this a little bit as well for the main event. I like that it was sponsored by the General.
Yeah. that was nice. The Ring General and the General. Yeah,
that was great.
All right. So like these WWE shows often go, there is a long pause from the open of the show to the open of the first match. You know, they did Cardi B. They played the intro video. Then, you know, they have Jey Uso make his entrance, and it was after Jey Uso's entrance, who was Mr. Main Event. Jey Uso was the first guy out the curtain last night. When his entrance finally ended, we were 15 minutes since the pay-per-view started. Then Roman and the opponents, Bron Breakker, Bronson Reed, they all come out, and it's 21 minutes after the show has went on the air that the bell finally rang for our opening match of SummerSlam. This was Roman Reigns' first SummerSlam match in 2 years. If you remember, he returned last year, but he didn't have a match on the show. And this was only his 12th match in WWE since SummerSlam 2023. Think about that. Smart man to make all those dollars and not have to work very much. 12 matches in the last 2 years. And, Yeah, I thought this match overall was slow to start, heated up at the end. I definitely would have cut some time off of it, as Carl alluded to a minute ago. You know, they brawled at the very beginning, cleared out the ring, the babyfaces did. Then Jay's theme comes back on. They're doing the yeet. And then ultimately, Roman is dragged out of the ring. And then Jay Uso takes everybody out, hitting a dive to the outside. I got tons of notes on this match, but overall, Jesse, give me your thoughts.
Did not like the music intermission for Jay. He was like looking at Roman, like finger twirl, mm-hmm. finally started up again. I was like, that's not, ugh. Definitely not my thing. It was a little bit slow as well, like you said, to go. There was a lot of solid spots. I think Roman overshooting his target on the dive over the top was awesome in a sense, but I worried about his left shoulder at the same time because it looked like it just a lot of the brunt of the impact hit his left shoulder.
Yeah.
Outside of that, I'm still a Bron Breakker fan. I look forward to hopefully this story progressing with him eventually breaking away from the faction, like later on down the line, and becoming a solo entity. Mm-hmm. I love the putting the straps back on and then taking them right back off after he got pissed off and he was going for another spear. Yeah, I said all in all, this match was fine, and I left it right in the middle. It was like 3 to 3.25 for me.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Me too. Yeah, Braun, by the way, I haven't seen anything this morning, but it looked like he got hurt in this match. Later in the show, his knee was all taped up. He was limping around. We'll see. Carl, your thoughts?
Yeah, there's a clip of him being helped behind the stage after the match. So hopefully it's just an impact injury and it's not been too serious, because he's definitely been a beneficial of the work that they did with Seth, being given more mic time, but actually started with all the fake injury. And I think that's good. I, like Jesse, look forward to him breaking away. I still think, even though there's a story with Punk and Seth to play out, I still think that my play would be the Batista turn around the Rumble next year and have him be the one to dethrone Seth. But as a match, it was solid, a little slow at points. Compared to Jey Uso, I just don't see it. I've never seen it. He's super over and charismatic, and you absolutely do go with that. But I long for the days of him and Jimmy getting back together, because they're far better as a tag team together than even them are individually in ring. And I just, yeah, that tag division needs something on the Raw side, because mm-hmm. it certainly ain't getting it from the Judgment Day.
Yeah. Yeah, I gave this match 3.5 in my review on Patreon. It was, yeah, the second half was solid. Definitely the beginning dragged, as we said. Here's kind of how it played out. So, you know, we talked about how early on they cleared the house. There's the yeet stuff. The theme music comes back on. Then Roman gets dragged out of the ring. Jay takes everyone out. Then you got Braun giving Roman this running shoulder block on the outside. And when he did it, he kind of like came down on top of Roman, which was another point I was kind of worrying about his shoulder. Jesse, to your point on the dive that's coming up here. But he gave him the shoulder block, like airborne, comes down right on top of him. And then Jay's getting worked over in the ring by Bronson and Breakker back and forth. There were a few "we want Roman" chants, but mostly early, I thought the crowd came across pretty dead. And that's kind of because they're in a stadium. We talked about this with All In. It's really hard to gauge crowd reaction in a stadium, especially when there's no roof like MetLife. I mean, this, you know, the sound just goes straight up. I'm sure the crowd was hot. I had a friend that was there. I was texting him. He said the crowd was really into it, but it wasn't really coming across on TV at this point in time. You had Breakker putting Jay in a chin lock, and he started to taunt Roman. He was doing like the Roman Reigns crowd singing thing at him. Mm-hmm. Crowd kind of got into that a little bit. You had Braun coming off the ring apron to jump at Jay on the outside, but instead he lands on the table. Didn't break. Braun comes down like knee first on the tables. And then Jay ultimately goes for the hot tag, but Bronson pulled Roman off the ring apron when he was going for the tag. And Breakker was like tackling Jay too, so Jay was jumping for the hot tag, and it was timed perfectly, because as Jay is midair, Breakker tackles him, and Bronson's pulling Roman off the ring apron at the exact same time. But ultimately, Jay does make the hot tag after a DDT onto Bronson Reed, and then Breaker tags in at the same time. So we get Breaker and Roman, and Roman absolutely destroys him. He goes for the spear, but got an elbow from Bron Breaker. Ultimately sends Breaker to the outside, and that's when he hits that running dive over the top rope where he kind of flipped as he hit the guys, taking out Breaker and Reed, but really barely making contact with those guys. Overshoots him, as Jesse said, lands really hard on his back on the outside. It was a pretty scary looking spot. We did have Bronson Reed hit a dive to the outside, then on Jay and Roman, almost overshot them too. Bron hit a running clothesline on Roman right after that, taking him kind of across the announce table. And then Breaker hits the bulldog off the top on Jay Uso, with Bronson Reed holding him up, the old Steiner spot, covers, but Jay kicks out. So then Breaker goes for the Superman punch, but he ends up getting a Superman punch from Roman. Roman spears Breaker through the barricade on the outside. Bronson goes for the splash off the top, but Roman Superman punches him while he's up there on the top rope. And then you get Roman helping Jay up. And then they both give Bronson Reed they're calling the 1D, the Dudley's 3D move. You get a two count with Breaker jumping in there to break it all up. Breaker goes for the spear on Jay, but Roman shoved him out of the way and takes the spear for him. And they really sold on commentary that, oh, this is a new Roman Reigns. You know, in the past, he always thinks of himself first, but now he's thinking of other guys. And Wade Barrett, who is tremendous on commentary during the show, so much better than Pat McAfee, is really selling like, oh, is he getting soft? You know, is this going to be the same Roman Reigns? He took the spear for Jay. So then right after that, Jay takes out Bron Breakker to the outside, and then he hits the splash off the top rope on Bronson Reed, covers for the pinfall. This match went about 21 minutes. Yeah, again, like the end sequencing was pretty good, kind of slow to get going, but that's how it all played out.
Niall, I agree with you. I said on an unplug that the bronze I felt should have gone over here. Yeah, because maybe that could have set up something later with Bron and Roman down the line. I mean, in that case, it's a 50-50 pick 'em, what you want to do there. And then, one thing I did notice, and this might have been something that Carl had mentioned earlier with the Bron Breakker injury. Paul Heyman was going up the ramp by himself, where the Brons were at ringside still, and I wondered why, for whatever reason. Is like, is there going to be something down the line with some dissension with the Brons, or I guess maybe it's the injury.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, man, taking notes on this match was difficult because I kept wanting to write Bron, and then I'm like, am I going to think it was Bronson Reed? And I had to like go to the last names, and Breaker's not the easiest name to type out. Yeah.
Yeah. They had a hard time getting him up for that 1D also. Jay just didn't use his legs enough, and the impact you could tell wasn't as great as it should have been.
Yeah. Any other thoughts, Carl, before we move on here?
No, I'm interested to see where to go with Roman next. A long shot suggestion from McMahon, it might be Punk, because they teased something with when he left Punk sitting on his ass and didn't give him his hand. But I don't know. I mean, that there's a few question marks on where guys go, but Roman, I doubt, will be working until Survivor Series now. Imagine that's probably his next date. If not, maybe far out as a Rumble.
Yeah, could be. Like I said, 12 matches in 2 years. So we shall see. I don't imagine he's going to start working more as he gets older. So probably going to be pretty rare. Mm-hmm. Right after this match, they showed celebrities in the crowd. They had that Minute Maid juice box section. My God, that I mentioned earlier. That was thankfully the only time we saw the Minute Maid juice box section. And then we get to the Women's Tag Team Championship match with Raquel Rodriguez and Roxanne Perez defending against the new team of Alexa Bliss and Charlotte Flair. I got to say, you guys, this has been, and I'm surprised I'm saying this with Charlotte television, but this has honestly been some of the best stuff going on TV, the back and forth between Alexa and Charlotte. I mean, they've been all over social media, like traveling around together and posting stuff. And I actually think the team is pretty interesting. This was a high spot, you know, early in the show. I thought that this was an entertaining match. Obviously, the right decision to have Alexa and Charlotte win the titles here. The match started about an hour after they went on the air, just talking about the timing here again. But, you know, let me ask you first, Carl, what do you think of this Alexa Bliss, Charlotte Flair tag team?
I think it's an example of maybe some of them in WWE learning from AEW. Because that's something AEW did with Harley Cameron and Anna Jay, that sort of odd sort of tag team, which you can play on that. And I think it's been good. It's my first thought when I saw Charlotte rock out in Nashville in the cowgirl hat, I'm like, what is going on here? Like, this doesn't feel like Charlotte Flair, but actually it's a good thing because it's showing a different side to her, not just this goddess that we see. And I think, you know, I will talk about Tiffany Stratton, about character development and how that's a long road. I think with Charlotte, we're seeing a different side finally in her late 30s. I think that's good. And Alexa has so much goodwill that she naturally creates a good feeling. But yeah, I think it's been good fun. It's been one of the better things on SmackDown, which possibly is not the highest bar at times. But, you know, credit to him and turn it around from someone who no one cared about 2 months ago to they actually want to see Charlotte in there. She got a big pop for the hot tag. It's great. Fair play to him.
Yeah, I mean, I thought Alexa is by far the most over person in this match. The crowd goes nuts for everything that she does. And it's a testament to her and how popular she is that she can get the crowd to cheer Charlotte Flair of all people. You know, Charlotte getting cheered. Who would have thought? Pair up with Alexa Bliss. That makes it happen, Jesse.
Opposites attract in this aspect, the frenemies and how they're playing off and the characters being completely different, with Alexa being likable and a little bit odd at times. And like I said, Charlotte's almost like this mythical goddess who just thinks she's better than everybody else. And she's let her guard down, I think. And that's what's really made this tag team a lot of fun to watch with their back and forths on television. And at times it can be awkward, but it's a good awkward. So I'm truly enjoying this as well, which also means I think, if you continue this momentum, that the split's going to have a pretty sweet payoff.
Oh yeah, 100%. Yeah, let's walk through the match. So Bliss was in early. She's taken punishment, but she ends up hitting this head scissors, and she tags in Charlotte. And Charlotte's hitting offense, but then Raquel was on her offense, and she fights back. Charlotte hits this Hurricane Rana out of the corner on Raquel, kind of sloppy, like almost did it in slow motion. And then Roxanne gets tagged in. Bliss is tagged in. This is where I wrote, Bliss is the most over person in this match. I mean, crowd was going nuts on this tag for her and Roxanne. She's dominating. She goes for the Sister Abigail, but then Roxanne rakes her eyes to get out of that. She goes for the Twisted Bliss, but Roxanne got her knees up to break that up. And then Raquel takes Bliss out with a clothesline. You get Roxanne and Raquel working over Bliss for a while, getting the heat here. It's just a funny spot where you could hear Charlotte. I thought it was kind of funny. She's calling for the tag and she goes, Lexi, I'm open. I don't know if you guys caught that. I thought that was kind of funny.
She was a volleyball player, right? Not basketball player.
Yeah. So then Charlotte tags in and she takes out both of the opponents with a crossbody off the top. She's hitting chops. She hits a moonsault off the top onto both of them. Raquel kicks out. Roxanne hits a springboard moonsault to take out Charlotte as she's working over Raquel. So then Bliss goes to hit Raquel, but she accidentally nails Charlotte with his forearm. Looks horrified. Raquel hits the Tahana bomb, and then Roxanne hits the Pop Rocks, but Bliss breaks up the pin. Bliss ends up pulling Charlotte to their corner so that Charlotte can then make the tag to her. Bliss goes for Sister Abigail on Roxanne, and she hits it as Charlotte takes out Raquel with a big boot. Alexa pins Roxanne. About a 13-minute match. Overall, like, this one didn't overstay its welcome. I thought it was a pretty solid match. Honestly, like, when I was thinking about star ratings, I had it pretty much neck and neck with that opener. I ended up, I think, giving it like a quarter star less. But yeah, this was a fun match, solid match. I mean, you're not looking for like a 4.5-star match out of these people, but yeah, for what it was meant to do, I thought it 100% delivered. Carl, any thoughts?
A really solid match. I felt Roxanne. Again, another great performance on the PLE from her. You know, I keep having to remind myself she's 23 years old. Like, she has got so much road ahead of her as a talent. And Alexa, I agree with what Niall said about she's one of the best of her generation. I absolutely agree. If you look at her, you know, how much she's outkicked her coverage at times at various points, I mean, she's been fantastic. And Yeah, the match was always going to be what it was, solid, because you've got Charlotte, who I still don't think is 100%. I don't think that knee is where she probably wants it to be. Raquel has improved, but doesn't feel like the finished product and may never be that. And obviously Alexa and Roxanne are the two foils for the bigger opponent. So yeah, I'm thoroughly sports entertained by it.
Yeah, to Niall's point, I mentioned this in the group, but longtime listeners of this program, which, by the way, I didn't note this last week, but we just had our 9-year anniversary of this show. I believe it was July 26, 2016. But I remember when she got drafted, Alexa, I want to say in like the fall of 2016, this was when it was just Kyle and I hosting the show. And I was constantly saying, you know, Alexa Bliss, she might not be the best worker, like as far as a wrestler goes, but her character work, and she's the best actress in the division. I was always saying that on the pod. And I remember people giving me shit on social media at the time. And we got into 2017 and she kind of started that rise. And I kept saying, like, she's one of the best in the women's division. And then by 2018, I think when she was cashing in Money in the Bank, that was a super cool moment. I think people were finally on board, like, okay, she's legit, you know. But yeah, I was on that Alexa Bliss bandwagon on this program in 2016 saying she is the one to watch right now. And I think she's proven that to be the case. Agree with what Niall said. I mean, as far as character work goes, she is one of the best of the last decade. Jesse.
The mean girl stuff she played with Nia Jax at WrestleMania to actually garner sympathy on the other side was some pretty impressive stuff. So we definitely agree there. Yeah, I thought this match definitely served its purpose. And how long is Roxanne Perez going to be the prodigy for? I feel like it's been 5 years now. Like she broke into the business at 18. So yeah. I think it's time to kind of transition that aspect on. We know she's good. So hopefully once Liv Morgan comes back, then we can see more character stuff out of her, because she can definitely work. There's zero question there. Yeah. And I'm very curious to see, I've said this, I think, multiple times. Can we actually make these women's tag team titles interesting?
Yeah.
Keep it consistent.
Yeah. I think this will help because, again, like we were saying, these two have been pretty good on television together in the backstage segments and everything. So we will see where this goes. Guys, before we go any further on this show, I do want to say, if you want to help us out, I see we got a decent crowd watching right now. Hit the like button if you haven't already. That's going to help us reach more people. There's like 100 probably SummerSlam podcasts on YouTube going right now between now and last night. So if you want to help us stand out from the pack, like the video, share it with one of your friends, subscribe to the channel. We would really appreciate that. And if you're on the podcast feeds, of course, we appreciate you as well. That's still where the bulk of our downloads come from. Make sure you're subscribed on your favorite podcasting platform. Send us to a friend. If every single person did that, we could double our viewership and listenership in 1 week. That would be super cool. So help us out. Let people know they should be listening to Top Rope Nation.
Brittany, thanks for coming in. Haven't seen you in the chat before. So welcome.
Yeah. Brittany is one of our regulars on the BR streams. So super cool to see her joining. She's with Jeremy and I almost every stream. So yeah, cool to see Brittany joining us here on the live stream. I tried to get some of those listeners to come over last night, Jesse, at the very end of the Bleach Report show. I'm like, and by the way, tomorrow morning, Top Rope Nation, join us. I'm glad to see Brittany made her way over.
It's going to be super easy to pull that trigger this evening.
Yeah, like in minutes, we'll be on YouTube. Tune in. Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Save big money right now at Menards. From smoke and carbon monoxide detectors to fire extinguishers and more, Kidde a home safety products keep your family protected in case of emergencies. Smoke and carbon monoxide detectors are perfect for your living spaces, offering protection and peace of mind. Save big money on all Kidde products at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at
Menards. All right, so they follow this with Sami Zayn and Karrion Kross. I mean, this is, to me, the weakest match on the show. You know, not that Sami Zayn is solid. Karrion Kross is okay, but he's got a great following going. You know, ever since he cut that kind of shoot style promo online, and this was really odd because Karrion, I felt, was the most over of these two. Like, it seemed like the crowd was more behind Karrion Kross than Sami Zayn, and who would have ever expected that a few months ago, you know? So we asked, you know, some of the people in our group. I think Michael Jenkinson had said, yeah, he was there live and more of the crowd was cheering Karrion Kross than they were cheering Sami Zayn. And the match was very brief, pretty back and forth early. You get Scarlett out there. She gives Cross the lead pipe, but Sammy dodges it and he hits the Blue Thunder Bomb for a two count. So then Sammy was kind of losing his temper and he's beating the hell out of Cross. And ultimately, Scarlett offers the pipe to Zayn, you know, trying to draw him over to the dark side like they've been hinting at on TV. But he ends up just throwing it back to the outside. He hits an exploder on Cross into the turnbuckles, hits the Huluva kick, gets the pinfall. Zayn goes over about 8 minutes and 10 seconds on this one. Jesse, your thoughts?
When Triple H was with the crew at the end of last night, there were a good chunk of chants in the crowd of "We want Cross." Yeah, his character is getting over. And Niall literally just hit what I was about to say. He is a free agent at the end of 2025, unless they make the decision to start trying to construct a contract for him. I think it would be in solid interest to give it a go and renew him for a couple of years, because this is the most interesting he has been to that audience ever.
Yeah,
I think Adam Cole killed a lot of his mystique in NXT when he was world champion. And he really hasn't recovered, but he's been doing the best that he can. The problem is they haven't really been putting a spotlight on him. And it's been really odd that Sammy got the win here. I felt that if you were going to continue with this push of Karrion Kross, a win was much needed. And I think Sammy won 2 out of 3. So that pushes Karrion off to the side and maybe to the background. But yeah, the match was just there, which you don't really say much when you see Sami Zayn in the ring.
Yeah, no, I was stunned that Cross didn't win this match. You know, I guess maybe they're thinking they're gonna let him leave, but it's a little risky proposition when the guy's got more momentum than he's ever had in your promotion and then just to let him walk. But you know, we'll see.
And behind the scenes, he is a super likable human being. I've met him and we actually talked for about 5 minutes, and yeah, he's definitely got some solid insight. He's very intelligent as well. So yeah, I'd like to see him succeed wherever he goes, and hopefully he can just keep this interest level high wherever.
Oh, and also for a promotion that cares so much about like entrances and theatrics, his entrance is phenomenal and the crowd always goes nuts for it. I mean, back to the NXT days. So he seems, and he's got the look, he seems to have pretty much everything they want in a superstar. You know, like we've talked about Jey Uso. I'm not saying Karrion Kross is over as Jey Uso, don't get me wrong, but he's over right now. I mean, certainly he could be in that, like, you know, upper mid card. He could ultimately get into that like IC title picture level, I think, if they went hard with him. Should have had a win last night if that was the plan. Mm-hmm. You know, but you know, like for Jay is a guy who as a single is kind of constrained in the ring. His matches aren't always great, but he's got the character, he's got the entrance. Cross has got that too, you know? So I was stunned that they didn't have him win here.
And contrary to some of the video clips out there, Karrion Kross 100% back bumped last night. So he's doing just fine.
I was watching for that. Yeah. Carl, any insight you can share here?
I think there might be an element with WWE here that they're playing hardball with Cross because they know he's really got one likely destination, and that's TNA. He's not going to AEW as long as Don Callis is there. That is not going to happen, regardless of what is behind that. Him and Scarlett have made it clear they don't want to be in the same company as Don Callis. So that limits them, and effectively they'd get him for free then because they've got the TNA partnership. So I think he's someone who would be a really good second for someone if they had an act that they felt could benefit from his type of character being around. Him and Scarlett would be a really good package to put around a guy who's maybe sort of looking to build from the IC level to the world title, world heavyweight championship level. I don't know if we've got anyone in that position right now. Don Mysterio, maybe, but then he's switching Dom out of Judgment Day to put him in another thing, and how would that fit? That's probably the name I could gravitate towards. But in-ring, he's not terrible, but at the same time, he's very limited, and he has got a $1 million look and probably a $1 re-IQ at times. But most people do say he's like backstage. He's probably got a good mind for the business. So I would cut the contract. I don't think he's going to be asking for mega money at the end of the day. And it's not like this company doesn't have mega money anyway. Let's be fair. I know that's not their mantra, but you know, it just seems a really silly thing to do to play hardball. But we could be being worked again. You never know.
Yeah.
Mega or mega money?
I don't want to get into politics. I nearly vomited at one point last night, which we all know what that's about. Let's not go there.
Yeah.
Agreed.
No, Cross, I mean, he should never be in a match that goes over 10 minutes. he should always be in short matches. They kept this one short. You know, it was fine. I just thought wrong winner for what's been happening. But, you know, we'll see. After this, they played the Hogan tribute video. And they showed Nasty Nick Hogan in the crowd. Less said on Nick, probably the better. But nice to see him pay tribute to Hulkster. They played Real American in MetLife. Crowd popped for that. And they followed that up with Tiffany Stratton defending the women's championship against Jade Cargill. I don't know, man. It might be in the running for Jade's best match in WWE. What do you guys think? Yeah.
Absolutely.
There's a lot of competition, but I mean, I thought this was a pretty good match.
Short and fluid, which is much like Carl mentioned with Karrion Kross with a 10-minute match or less. Jade Cargill, you're in that same boat too. Same thing with your presentation as well. So they're almost similar in those tastes. Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Carl, what do you think?
I would probably go as far as saying it's probably her best match, full stop. I can't think of anything in AEW that springs to me that's a mind that was on that same level. Maybe the Statlander match.
I was just looking that up. Yeah, probably the Statlander match. It was like a Rampage match.
It was, yeah.
2023.
But I thought, you know, fair play to for Tiffany for getting her through that match. You know, they were heavy. I was surprised. They were so heavy on what this woman's achieved in 4 years. I'm thinking, oh, she's definitely dropping the belt here then. And for the outcome to be what it was surprising, but the right outcome, in my opinion. I don't think you can have Jade with the belt leading that division right now. I think Tiffany has work to do, more on the character side. That needs to be more than Tiffy time. But she's 26, she's been in the business for 4 years. That will come. Look at what Becky Lynch was in 2016, 2017, compared to what she is now. It takes time for these girls, no matter how experienced they are, to get that character that clicks. Whereas Jade, I don't think she's ever going to improve in the ring beyond where she is now. So do you have to pick her opponents very carefully to make sure you're maximising the most out of investment? Because she's got a fantastic look, as Jesse says. She comes across as a star. That awkwardness she had when she first appeared in AEW is completely gone. She really looks the part, but you can see the cogs turning in every single match, every single spot. You can see she's almost like, you can almost like, it's like she's got like, she's teleported her thoughts out. You can actually see her visualizing what she's about to do. And it is off-putting if you're paying too much attention to the match. I do tend to switch up a little bit on the matches to enjoy them a little bit more.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. Everything looks pretty choreographed with her. They got to keep it short and tight. She did have a good match with Naomi at Evolution too, but I think this was better. Like we said, it was like a 7-minute match, but for the most part, as Jesse said, pretty fluid throughout. There was one spot that was a little iffy, definitely painful looking. I'll get to that here in a second. Oh. Yeah, but as it starts off, Jade's on offense early. She suplexes Tiffany to the outside. Tiffany hits a dive to the outside onto Jade. And then Tiffany does a swanton off the top onto Jade. Jade reverses Tiffany's back elbow coming into the corner into a backbreaker, that handspring back elbow that she does. Jade just caught her. Backbreaker. Jade then hits the eye of the storm for two. Jade breaks up a moonsault attempt and stays on offense. This is where Tiffany is coming off the top on this moonsault, and Jade gets her 2 feet up. And I'm telling you, man, she connected 100% on this. I had a screenshot of it that I posted in the group. I could try to find it here, but man, it looked pretty brutal. I don't know if I have that at the ready here or not. Let me see if this is it. I think this is possibly it. Yeah, here we go. Take a look at this. I mean, Tiffany is all airborne there still, as you can see, and Jade's got both feet just right into her gut there. That looked pretty painful. That was like the one spot in the match where you're, you know, squirming in your chair just a little bit. But other than that, like I said, it's pretty good. So after that, and Jade's on offense, they're exchanging right hands. Tiffany ends up hitting a Hurricane Rana. Then she hits that handspring back elbow into the corner. Stratton hits an Alabama slam. She goes for the moonsault. Actually, no, sorry. This is where the feet happen. This was the moonsault where the feet go up. That's where Tiffany takes all of it. Then Cargill ends up hitting Jaded, but Tiffany gets her feet on the ropes. Jade hits a choke slam. Then they do this spot up in the corner where Jade is going for Jaded off the top rope, but Tiffany reverses that, and she hits a moonsault off the top for the pinfall. 7 minutes and 5 seconds. I would have thought that Jade would win here. I thought almost certainly she was going to capture the women's title here. So I was pretty stunned by the result, but happily surprised, I would say, on the quality of the match.
Especially when you're pouring that much money into Jade Cargill. And back to Niall's point with the experience factor, that's the difference between somebody actually working their ass off behind the scenes and I guess somebody else just kind of, I wouldn't say not working their ass off. However, I would say relying more on their natural talent in the ring and not progressing. This is clearly why Jade Cargill should have went directly to NXT as opposed to somebody else right now who's down there with a very similar look to Tiffany Stratton, but she should be up on the main roster and she could play a different character. She'll be just fine.
Yeah. I mean, we've talked about this on the show so many times. I was always stunned that they just hotshotted Cargill right to the main roster when she obviously needed in-ring work. And we've seen it since she's been up there at times. Like we said, this is probably her best performance, but still there were issues. As Carl mentioned, you can see things kind of choreographed ahead of time. And this is probably a topic for another show, but Mariah May, my God, so far they're just blown it with her. That stuff they got her doing in NXT is horrendous. To go from the best women's storyline of the last decade to that is such a downgrade, such a horrendous downgrade. So yeah, they if you could have reversed it, you'd want to send Mariah May straight to the main roster. I know that probably they felt they didn't have a spot for her, but look, when you sign a talent to that level, you got to make a spot, in my opinion. Sucks, but that's where we're at. They still got time. They could turn it around, but right now, not high on what they're doing with Mariah down there. All right, let's move on. So we get to the semi-main event. Randy Orton and Jelly Roll. Jelly Roll taking on Drew McIntyre and Logan Paul in the celebrity match of the night. Jesse, your thoughts?
Michael Cole with the funniest line of the entire night. Jelly Roll has lost 230 pounds to get ready for this match.
Yeah. And you know what was funny about that? They were hammering on how Jelly Roll's lost all this weight. And then there was that spot in the match where Logan Paul goes to body slam him and he can't pick him up. And they're selling like, oh, he's so, but you just told me the guy lost over 200 pounds. Why can't he slam him? He doesn't even look that big anymore. I thought that was kind of odd, sending mixed signals there.
He might have lost 10 or 20 pounds to get ready for this match. Yeah, congratulations on the overall weight loss and your 299 pounds, but you did not lose 230 pounds in X amount of months to get yourself in this spot.
No, he's legit lost that weight, but not for this match. My God. Yeah.
Context, yeah. Michael Cole.
Carl, give us your instant thoughts on this one.
When they cut the first angle, I met a mate saying this WWE product is a rip. You've got Randy Orton, who was I actually called him Randall Keith Orton in the message, who spent the past decade, really, half-arsing, being more interested in going back to the bus and sparking up. And he comes out and cuts a fire promo about Jelly Roll, in defense of Jelly Roll. I'm like, what is going on here? But God bless him. The people were in, you know, you heard how, you know, during the heat, how into it they were. And yeah, it worked shockingly well. I had very low expectations and they did the match in a completely different way to how I expected. And it worked. And God, yeah. Wrestling's beautiful when it works like that because it shocks you. It's special.
Yeah.
Not this match wasn't special, but when something shocks you, it's special that you can shock you.
Yeah, it was much better than it had any right to be. You know, I think going in, You know, like we've said a lot of times, Randy Orton is a solid worker. He just never does anything that really stands out to us as fans, but like he could work, you know, he's a good worker. Drew obviously out there holding it together as well. And, you know, Logan could do the high spots and yeah, Jelly Roll basically did everything they needed him to do throughout the match. So, you know, we talk about it here. They get Jelly Roll in there right away and he's on offense. He's hitting an elbow. He's hitting a shoulder block. This is where Paul tried to slam him, but couldn't right after they were talking about, he lost 240 pounds. Jelly Roll ends up dropping an elbow on Logan. Paul then tags in Drew. Jelly Roll stays in there. He goes to tag Orton. And, you know, he was basically like, I want to stay in here. I got this. And Drew ends up slapping him in the back of the head. So then Jelly Roll is like, yeah, I'm going to stay in there. He hits some punches before Drew ends up taking him out with a headbutt. And then Drew's chopping him. He locks him in an arm bar. He's stomping the arm. Ultimately, Logan Paul tags in. They give a double suplex to Jelly Roll. Logan hits a leg drop like this in the splits for two. Drew then is landing some forearms to Jelly Roll. He takes out Randy on the ring apron, and then Jelly Roll tosses Drew to the outside. Then Jelly Roll tags in Orton, who takes out Drew. Then Paul on the apron. He gives that hang up DDT to Drew back into the ring. He goes for the RKO, but Paul pulls Drew to safety. So then Randy's attacking them both outside. He drops Drew across the announce table. Then Logan Paul across the announce table. Drew then hits the Claymore on Orton right by the table to take him out. So then they put Jelly Roll on the table and Logan goes up top and he takes the Prime bottles and he like cheers them and the Prime, you know, sprays all over the place. And Logan Paul hits this insane frog splash off the top rope through Jelly Roll on the table. Look, no matter what you want to say about Logan Paul, and he is a douche at times, the dude has athletic ability, and this was crazy looking. Mm-hmm. He got so much height. I mean, that announce table's pretty far away from the corner. He got way up there. And, you know, credit to Jelly Roll for taking this too, and taking the impact. They go through the table, and then the medical staff, they start taking Jelly Roll away very, very slowly as Orton is getting worked over in the ring. So it's 2-on-1 against Randy. Randy does hit a superplex on McIntyre, just totally out of nowhere. They're still really slow to get Jelly Roll out of there. I mean, they are walking at a snail's pace around the ring. And you see where this is headed here. You know he's going to come back in. And they finally kind of get him over to the entrance aisle. And then he tells him, no, he wants to wrestle. And Jelly Roll climbs back up the ring steps. And he gets tagged by Orton. And Jelly Roll starts clotheslining Logan Paul. And he's walking just fine now. He's not selling anything. He choke slams Logan Paul. He gives Drew the black hole slam. He gives Paul a power slam out of the corner, but Drew breaks up the pin. So then Drew gives Jelly Roll the Claymore. Drew turns around right into an RKO. Paul then sends Orton into the ring post. Paul goes up top, hits a frog splash on Jelly Roll back in the ring, covers for the pinfall. You know, Jelly Roll selling, not the greatest. I would say
that's where I was going.
I mean, they put Jelly Roll over better than they've ever put over Karrion Kross, to our earlier point here. I mean, they put everything this dude did over in this match, and look, he delivered on what they needed him to do. It was pretty solid.
Yeah, he was crying about as much as CM Punk on WWE Unreal when he was walking around the ring, and he just looked like he was 75 years old, and all of a sudden he just snaps out of it. I want to get back in the ring, and he rushes up there as quick as only Jelly Roll can do to get the tag. And my line of the night, which I completely forgot about, he was dressed like a Valvoline worker.
Yes, you did put that in the Facebook group. That's right.
Why? Get some better ring gear, Jelly Roll.
I forget what it said on the back. It was a play on something. I can't remember.
Son of a Sinner?
Something like that, yeah.
Something along those lines. I mean, I know he's resurrected his life, and that's been the big story, I think, throughout with him. So kudos for him to do that, and he's living out something he probably has wanted to do for a while.
Yeah. Carl, give us your thoughts.
Yeah, I think I kind of threw my hands up when they had the extended period outside the ring. I'm like, okay, it's going to be a Rick Knox ref match, basically, because there was like, yeah, it was a 100 count by the point I did the table spot. And I think at that point, I'm just like, I'm just going to accept this for what it is. It's Gaga. It's a bit of fun. It's a guy in Drew McIntyre that can always recover himself if he wants to lose. Logan Paul is part-time, and Orton is Orton. I think he's pretty Teflon. So they did a good job. And yeah, kudos to Jerry. He really wanted to be there. And I think that's a big credit to him, comparing to another rapper that clearly wanted the limelight, but when a certain Dwayne disappeared from the scene, suddenly his interest dropped off. I'm sure that's just a coincidence, though, and it's nothing to do with egos or anything like that.
Yeah. Yeah, so they went about 17 minutes here. Again, much better than expected. Then they showed Hunter Hearst Helmsley at the White House. Apparently the whole crowd was booing for the most part. Yep. I don't know. They showed they showed still shots of Hunter for the Making America Fit Again campaign. Look, I can make jokes about heart issues, steroids, making America fit, whatever. We're just going to move on to the main event, which was incredible. So look, let me just say, I know on this podcast, we've given Punk a lot of shit since he came back to WWE. But also, I think one of the reasons that people tune into the show is we are objective about the product. We criticize when it needs to be criticized. We praise when it needs to be praised. And no matter what we feel about Punk's return to WWE, I mean, the dude can obviously go. And this was a hell of a match. This was, I would say, I've been going back and forth on this. It's one of his top three matches since coming back to wrestling, I believe. I think the only match I would for sure put ahead of it is the match he had with MJF, the dog collar match, which was my match of the year in 2022. Love that match so much. I think that was definitely better. I could see some people putting his Hell in a Cell with Drew over this one, but I think it's pretty close. And, you know, he had a pretty good Dynamite match with MJF too, but he also Eddie Kingston at Full Gear 21. That was a really solid match. That's probably
top five.
Yeah, we were there. Yeah.
Love that sprint. That's probably good.
Top five match since he came back to wrestling. But I mean, I think this is number two or number three. This was a freaking phenomenal match. And when I watched it again this morning, I liked it better on the second watch. And I know he's not here right now. I'll ask him tonight on the show, but Justin Joint had to be beside himself with the sweating, because I mean, before you're 10 minutes in, Punk is just drenched in sweat, and he is taking these chops and the camera shots of this sweat just flying everywhere, right? And then the blood that you get from Gunther at the end of the match too. I mean, this was an awesome, awesome match. We'll get into like the details of everything that went down, but just broad strokes. Jesse, give us your thoughts.
They told a very good story throughout, with Punk just trying to work on the left arm and Gunther's physical nature just being way too much for him. The reversals of the finishers, which I liked, and ended up into a roll up and turned into a big boot. And here's the thing I really noticed about Gunther, because I know you're going to go through a lot of the play-by-play, Ryan, is that in all of his losses, his cocky nature has gotten him in trouble. It's a pattern that I just spotted this last night. I looked and I go, okay, it's the moment he gets cocky, you're like, oh, he's going to lose. Because he doesn't really get cocky and overconfident when he wins his matches. And that touch at the end with the blood, it reminded me a lot of one of my guilty pleasure movies, when Ivan Drago got cut open in round two of Rocky IV, Sylvester Stallone. All of a sudden, he just showed a chunk of human nature. The invincibility was gone. So as soon as that happened, that's when the tide started to turn and Punk felt he could win the match. Yeah, great stuff.
Yeah. Carl?
Yeah, I'd concur with the assessment. It's probably one of his best matches since he's come back. I've got a soft spot and a bias for him versus Joe at Wembley. I get it's tarnished because of what happened that same night. But being there in person, it was, for me, probably the best match on the card that night. They they told a really great story. As Jesse said, there was a great dollop of Bret Hart in that match. Probably came from Mr. Punk. And I think the whole Punk looking completely and utterly worn out and going through the mill helped what happened at the after the match as well. It all builds up to that and builds up to that angle. And to Brittany's point about Gunther, he's going to be gone. And that was the only nitpick I'd have, is that they tried to talk about it being a broken nose. But last time I checked, when you break your nose, you don't get blood on your forehead. to that level. But hopefully he won't be gone too long, because I think Gunther, for me, pound for pound as an all-round act, that's probably only a couple of people ahead of him in wrestling in the last 12 months. Mm-hmm. As an all-round character in ring, I probably may put him second, potentially behind Hangman.
The $100,000 question, Ryan, that I think everybody in Top Rope Nation wants to know: Gunther and CM Punk's sharpshooters. We would like your thoughts.
Well, I noticed Punk kind of did an homage to a Bret match with that sharpshooter spot, which I'll get through in the play-by-play. But overall, they both did pretty good sharpshooters. Gunther really sat back on that sharpshooter. I think I'll take Gunther's, although he kind of turned him in an odd way. But once he locked it in, it looked really, really solid. So I'll give Gunther the nod there for the best sharpshooter in this match. But I see everyone talking about the chat. Brittany's talking about it. Yeah, Gunther supposedly is going to be taking some time off for nose surgery. He had the injury going into the match, so they did that spot on purpose where he took the nosedive, pun intended, into the announce table to really sell that. And that was when he started bleeding. But hopefully he's not gone for too long, because he's one of the true highlights in this promotion. No question about it. So the match itself, we'll just walk through it here. Feel free to chime in and interrupt at any point if you want to talk about any of these spots in particular, gentlemen. But it was cool that Punk came out wearing a Fantastic Four gear. I see Tim in the chat. Tim's going to like that. And the white and the blue, dressed up like the Fantastic
Great
Four.
Great movie, by the way. Ooh. Go see that if you haven't.
I have not seen it yet. On the list. I did see Superman and really liked that one. Yeah, Fantastic Four is probably next for me. But yeah, cool gear, the white and the light blue out there. Then Gunther comes out, very back and forth early. You get some chain wrestling going. They're exchanging chops. Punk, in one of the most nimble moves I have seen him do in a while, does like a springboard up to the top rope, lands on his feet, stands up on the top rope, but then Gunther comes up behind him, chops the hell out of him from behind, really starts laying him in at this point. Punk's sweating like a beast already, I said in my notes. There's this great slow-mo shot of sweat flying everywhere as he gets chopped in the middle of the ring. I can just hear Justin Joint screaming across town at that point.
The blood coming off the chests of both of these guys too.
Yeah, they broke the skin in the chest here. I mean, Punk just took a beating in this match. I mean, we're only 10 minutes in here and he's sweating, he's bleeding in the chest. Punk goes for an abdominal stretch, goes for a GTS, but it gets reversed into a pinfall attempt. Mm-hmm. Then there's a big chop again. Punk's in the ropes and Gunther chops him. He rebounds back down, like into the ropes, back up. Then gets a big boot, more chops. Punk's fighting back with a chop of his own. He gets these leg kicks up on Gunther. Let's see. Lost my spot here. Yeah. Gunther is screaming at him. Come on, Punk. He's hitting the leg kicks. Ultimately, Gunther just takes him down with just this blistering, huge chop again. Then Gunther locks in a chin lock and he's screaming at him, "Who's the king now?" Punk fights out briefly, but then Gunther takes him down again. And this is where he locks in the sharpshooter. And Punk ultimately rolls it over and he's laying on the mat and he starts positioning Gunther's legs into the sharpshooter while he's laying on the mat. And it's exactly how Bret did it at SummerSlam 91 against Mr. Perfect.
Yes. Yes. Yep.
There's the homage to Bret in this match. And so Punk, then he does that and he ends up standing up and he briefly locks in the sharpshooter, but Gunther is back on top soon enough. More chops, back and forth, chops, right hands from both men. Punk hits a leg lariat. He runs into the corner at Gunther, but he gets caught and powerbombed for two. Punk then locks in the triangle. They're trying to check his shoulders. Sure looked like his shoulders were down to me, but he's got the triangle on. Punk reverses a sleeper attempt and hits a Russian leg sweep. He hits his running knee in the corner. He hits a bulldog out of the corner. Punk goes up top. He goes for his flying elbow, but he gets chopped and press slammed off the top. And then Gunther hits a frog splash, which I remember last night someone in the Bleacher Report stream goes, that should be called the bullfrog splash. Chops. Big clothesline from Gunther. Punk catches Gunther running off the ropes, goes for the GTS. Gunther reverses that into a powerbomb. There's a big drop kick by Gunther that sends Punk into the corner. Then another Gunther powerbomb for two. Punk is crawling on the mat, and they got Gunther just standing over the top of him. And I thought at this point there was going to be another homage to Bret Hart. I thought they were going to do the Survivor Series 95 finish. I thought Punk was going to, like, out of nowhere, as he's laying at Gunther's feet, stand up and small package for the win. I thought that's I could see that happening. They didn't do that, though. More chops. Punk is set across the top rope. Gunther bridges him down to the mat for this submission that looked pretty gnarly briefly. They go outside. Gunther drops Punk across the ring apron, and then he's taunting him. And Gunther goes and he stands up on the announce table and he's celebrating. And then Punk comes up and he trips him. And this is where Gunther takes that nose dive and he goes underneath the table, the blade, and he emerges and there's blood all over his face. And I got to say, he took that perfectly. Like, when he tripped, he really did land right on his head. It looked really good. Head first into the table. So now we got blood. And, you know, Punk has this great kind of facial reaction to it. Like, okay, this, he sees blood. This is his chance. And he's going after him in the ring, like Hail Mary attempt here. Hands, running knee in the corner, hits his flying elbow. He goes for the GTS again, but it's reversed into the sleeper. And Gunther's got it cinched in the ring, down on the mat. You think Punk is done here, but Punk fights out. He stands up and he hits the GTS. And there's this awesome sell by Gunther. He takes the GTS, but he's still on his feet, you know, and he's kind of teetering backwards. And so then Punk hits him with a second GTS, covers, gets the pinfall. Punk is the new world champion for now. But anything you guys want to jump in here?
In North America, at least, this the methodical offense and just the believability of how he can simply either overpower you, he can also out-wrestle you. He's an addition to any roster anywhere in the world. And I wish there were more creations like him in pro wrestling, because he's a throwback to yesteryear, but he's so unique. Yeah. This is Gunther's best match since probably... maybe WrestleMania, the triple threat with McIntyre and Sheamus.
Yeah, so, I agree. Yeah, it was phenomenal. I mean, yeah, go ahead,
Carl,
go ahead.
Yeah, I think with Gunther, I could see him going to SmackDown on his return. They need a top heel, assuming a face turn is going to, well, they will need a top heel regardless at the end, by the end of the year. Even if the face turn is a fake punt. And the idea of him and Cody going into Mania next year, it's quite appealing to me. I quite like that as a potential main event program for Cody, because he needs someone who's going to bring something out with a baby face. I think Gunther as a heel has that air of arrogance and that great character, and him, I think they could have a fantastic extended feud potentially. So I'd like to see him, because I don't really see much space for him on Raw with, you know, what happens next, and we've got that solidified top heel on Raw now. So hopefully it's not a long spell. I think it's sinus surgery, I think, some form of sinus surgery. So I don't know what recovery time is on that, but there's not that many shows coming up. You've got what, 3 shows booked in now for the rest of the year. So he can still be an on-screen presence, maybe get the Virgil mask out.
Mm-hmm. Ricky Morton?
The Ricky Morton one that we just talked about on Classics, yeah.
Yeah.
No, I mean, it's... Yeah, and also you could set up Gunther and Roman, which is one of the big matches they could do, too. Yeah, I mean, agree. There's not really much for him on Raw that we haven't already seen, but they send him over to SmackDown, and they keep the rest of the upper card about the same. That could set up some pretty intriguing possibilities, so I like that.
Ooh. Gunther Jacob Fatu.
Ooh, yes. That would be good.
Coming down the line, maybe in a couple years. Let's postpone that a little while.
Yeah, longer. I don't think I'll get to that one anytime soon, but down the line for sure. So yeah, you get Punk celebrating with the world title, which they said during the match that he was trying to get back the title that he hadn't had in 10 years. And Jesse, wasn't that title just created a couple of years ago? Not the same title.
2023 in May, the fourth iteration of the World Heavyweight Championship, because right now John Cena holds the other three.
I guess they're trying to make it like the old world title, you know, that they had big gold, whatever. But he got it back briefly and he's celebrating. He's got the tears flowing. You know, the crowd's going nuts. And I think at this point, we didn't really do a proper preview. You previewed it on Unplugged, Jesse, for our patrons. But I thought, you know, if Punk wins, we're 100% getting the cash in.
Yep.
And we're going to talk about the injury stuff here, or lack of injury, in a second. Let's just talk about what happened. So he's celebrating. He kind of like looks around at all of the crowd. And he gets back to the main hard cam and they zoom in on him and he's holding up the title belt. And then you hear Burn It Down. And man, Punk's facial reaction, I got it as the background on our thumbnail here on YouTube, was tremendous. He's like, oh, fuck, you know, like, here we go. And out comes Seth Rollins and he's got, you know, still got the knee brace on. He's coming out there on crutches with Heyman. And, you know, Heyman and him are talking about, you know, down the line, we, you know, watch out for us. We still got the briefcase. And then Rollins turns around and he's taking his crutches to the back. And then all of a sudden he stops and he throws the crutches down and the crowd goes nuts, you know, and he turns around and he takes off that knee brace and he walks down and then he jogs down to the ring and he gets in the ring and Punk immediately tries to fight him off and go for the GTS as a Hail Mary attempt, but he can't hit it. And then Rollins is taking him out with the briefcase, nails him in the head with it a couple of times, cashes in. They start the match, immediate curb stomp, a 1-2-3. Rollins is the champion. And Rollins celebrates with his whole heel group. Crowd popping for the heel winning the title, but you know, they always pop for Money in the Bank. And it just reminded me of WrestleMania, where night one of WrestleMania goes off the air and he's the story, you know, with the heel turn. And night one of SummerSlam goes off the air and he's the story. He's cost CM Punk the title. And you know, they're continuing this feud, ultimately a title match down the line between the two of them. I think right call to keep that feud going. I was talking with Ryan Huffman here, is in the chat. We were talking about this earlier. He would have liked it better, he said, if Rollins joined the match and Gunther didn't win and he pinned Punk to win the title and Punk never got the title. I could see that argument too. Mm-hmm. I think this adds a little bit more heat though, because Punk actually captured the title and then he screwed him, you know? So like Rollins keeps screwing Punk here, and man, it was phenomenal. This was a great ending. Well executed. Rollins did. Oh my God. The lengths that this man went to sell this thing. And we still don't know the true story on this. You know, first of all, react to the cash in, and then I'll talk about the injury, lack of injury, all that. Go ahead, Jesse.
Let's give Michael Jenkinson his kudos for sniffing this out from the very beginning.
Yeah, I was going to talk about that too.
Saying
he
this
immediately thought it was a work. And there might be elements of reality too. I'll talk about that. Nobody really knows. But Michael in our group immediately said, this is not real. Even when Sean Ross Sapp of Fightful was saying it was real. Lots of people were saying it was real. Seth, I'll just talk about it now. So Rollins sold this not only on TV and backstage at Evolution, where he was on crutches, like the day after Saturday night's main event, where he lost to LA Knight. We don't even know if LA Knight knew it was a work. They don't even know that. Like Sapp was commenting on that on Patreon and Fightful. He's like, we don't even know if LA Knight knew. Like they worked the whole locker room on this. So everybody who would usually know did not know. Rollins at his wrestling school in Davenport, Iowa, Black and Brave, had the brace on and the crutches. He worked his wrestling school trainees. There's footage of him. Now, I don't think this is as big of a deal as people on social are making out to be. They showed him on crutches in like downtown Davenport with his daughter. And like, look, he worked his daughter. That's easy. She at home, he definitely wasn't. All you got to say is, hey, daddy's going to pretend to be injured today. Look at, I'm going to use the crutches. That's not a big deal. But working your wrestling school trainees, that is next level. That's wild, man. Working the boys and ladies in the back, that's pretty crazy. LA Knight, we don't know, potentially. I'm going to be questioning, does LA Knight get a title shot? Because he just beat mm-hmm. this guy clean a few weeks ago. He should be the first title shot, shouldn't he be? So yeah, when this first happened, PW Insider said it was legit. Fightful alleged that everyone believed it to be legit. They were kind of careful with their wording though. It was like, the belief is it's legit. Some people thought it was a work. Meltzer was kind of thinking it was a work, but the one who really nailed it was John Pollock, because John Pollock at Post Wrestling said that he had heard of an injury angle they were going to do at Saturday Night's main event before it happened. He is the one guy who really got this. And then I had posted just like within a day, I think, of the injury in the Facebook group, what Brian Alvarez had said. And this was in response to Jenkinson's comment on it, that Alvarez was alleging on Figure Four Weekly that it possibly was a cover for a real injury, but it wasn't as serious as what they were playing it up on TV. That he might have had a small issue with his knee, but they played it up to be bigger so that you would be more shocked when he came back at SummerSlam. I think at that point in the group, I think our narrative was, look, it's, and we haven't done a show since then, so we couldn't talk about it here on the airwaves, but we were talking about it in the Facebook group, and we were saying like, yeah, we wouldn't be surprised if he came back at SummerSlam. He might really be injured, but it's probably minor compared to what they are selling. That was kind of the belief within, I would say, like 48 hours of the injury. Mm-hmm. But we didn't know for sure. The way that this played out was just perfectly done, just like his heel turn at WrestleMania.
That was my caveat on Unplugged. I said, I think Gunther retains, but if he does not, I said CM Punk will win and Seth Rollins will cash in. I just wasn't completely clear. So yeah. Impressive stuff that he could keep it kayfabe in 2025. You got to love that element of mystery. And with Punk being worn out from a half an hour in the ring of getting his ass kicked by Gunther, I mean, added to the element and made it easy for Rollins to do this. Look like the snively heel and off to the races we go for the rest of 2025. Yeah. Well executed.
And we may never know what the real deal was with this. Did he have like a sprained knee just a little bit, needed a couple of weeks off? That's possible. So they did the injury angle to give him some time off. We will never know for sure. But it certainly wasn't, you know, what people were thinking at the beginning and was being put out there about, like, he's going to be out for 9 months to a year, obviously. I mean, that was sold so well. Go ahead, Carl.
Yeah, and I think it's an element that WWE got that information out to create a doubt to people that would maybe be questioned more than others. Say if they got a measure out to Sean Ross Sapp, I don't think there'd be the level of doubt that there was for it going to John and going to Dave secondhand, because people always have that natural with Dave, particularly. Dave's got an AEW bias, Dave's putting out nonsense, and he has got quite a bit wrong with WWE lately. And John is quite open about his critique of WWE at times. Mm. So I wonder if maybe they played a little bit of a game there. I love it. I think it's been, I want more of this. I want more work.
Yeah.
Like, I want to be surprised. I don't want to know what's going to happen. I want that little bit of doubt in there. And credit to Rollins. I've seen some people saying that it's, you know, going back to WCW, working the boys. I mean, if the boys are that sensitive in the back, which I doubt they are, then they're probably in the wrong business, because it's not hurt them. It's creating more interest in the product, ultimately, and that's to the benefit of all of them. I can't see that being a factor. I just think it was a good bit of business, and hopefully now this heel group can kick on, because it's been a bit stop-start. We still need a name for them, by the way. I'm not saying every faction needs a name, but can we establish some sort of identity about them? Not, you know, we're calling them the Brawns, as an example. I think, you know, a lot of that. But yeah, really, really well done. Cash in. Not on the same level as Mania 31, obviously, but not far off.
Yeah.
And for once, the Money in the Bank cash ins this year have both been hits. When was the last time we said that in a two briefcase era? I can't think of any point.
No. Mm-mm. Yeah, I mean, this is when wrestling's at its best, when you don't know for sure what's happening. Yeah. And You know, they surprise you, which is very rare in 2025, you know, to actually get surprised. I found the post where we were all talking about this in the Facebook group. And yeah, we basically, the supposed injury was on Saturday, July 12th. Mm-hmm. And by Monday, we had a post that was really active in our Facebook group. And I had said, you know, Jenkins had immediately said, I think this is a work. And then I had responded, I think Michael might be of this opinion because of John Pollock's reporting on this. Turned out Michael had not seen John Pollock's reporting on this. He was just sniffing it out. Mm-hmm. But Pollock claimed that he was told of an injury angle they're going to do with Seth as of last Thursday. So 2 days before Saturday night's main event. And then on Wrestling Observer Live at the time, Alvarez said the injury to Seth's knee is real, but not as serious as they're going to make it out on TV. Everyone backstage at WWE claims it's a real injury. Everybody, even the producers, like everyone, all the match producers, anybody backstage was told it was real. Alvarez at the time said he thought it could be possible that WWE worked an injury angle to cover for an injury to Seth's knee that already existed prior to Saturday night's main event as a cover to get him off TV. Alvarez went on to say that he thinks Seth will be off TV due to a real injury, maybe even have a small procedure done. However, he thinks he'll be back. And he thought that WWE would imply that Rollins will be out 9 months or longer, which they never really gave a timetable to my knowledge, but they kind of were implying he was going to be gone, you know, a long, long time. And instead we get this all time moment where he shocks the crowd and ends SummerSlam. I mean, they have a real tough time ahead of them tonight to equal how this show went off the air. And apparently there's a lot of secrecy with this Cody Cena match and what's going to go down tonight. So hopefully you got something surprising in store again.
As Carl mentioned earlier, a lot of gimmick matches in this one. Mm-hmm. So kind of similar to Great American Bash 1986, Top Rope Nation Classics, but got to shill it every now and then. No, I think there's a couple of matches. Like I said, Becky and Lyra always deliver. Mm-hmm. And that six-pack tag team championship match, I think, is going to also over-deliver, especially if you saw the triple threat ladder match on SmackDown after WrestleMania. It's been probably one of the top five WWE matches of the year.
Yeah. Yeah, the match, they got six matches tonight. Dom and AJ also. They've got Solo and Jacob Fatu in the cage. Naomi versus Io Sky versus Rhea in a triple threat, which is going to be really good, I would assume. Yeah. And the street fight with John Cena and Cody Rhodes.
Rhea Ripley's found a dance partner in Io Sky, or vice versa, to where they've been hitting four-star matches and above, I think, in all of 2025 when those two get in the ring. So add Naomi to it. I'm looking forward to actually seeing a over-the-top performance from her for once in the ring, because something we really haven't seen is a standout in-ring prowess from her.
Yeah. Well, we'll be here to talk about it with you guys tonight, probably like 15 to 20 minutes after SummerSlam goes on the air. Make sure you are subscribed to the channel and you got bell notifications on so that you'll get an alert when we go live tonight. I'll be finishing up the Bleacher Report stream and then immediately coming over here to our channel with Jesse and Justin to recap night two tonight. So looking forward to that. Appreciate you tagging in, Carl, with us. Two shows in a row. You did awesome on our Hogan show. And then here today. Been a pleasure, my friend.
No, much appreciated.
Yeah. And appreciate your support on Patreon, too. You've been a longtime supporter of the show. So we appreciate that. Jesse, always good, my friend.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to tonight. There's some elements of mystery out there. We'll see if we can actually get Justin to enjoy it just a little bit too.
Yeah. Justin will be the wild card. Let's see how he reacts tonight. You'll want to tune in for that. So, all right, guys, this has been episode 391 of Top Rope Nation. We'll see you all again here in probably 10-ish hours or so. So until then, enjoy your Sunday. Enjoy night two of SummerSlam. We'll see you all again real soon. Take care, everybody.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.